The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Have it, the latest from the protests taking place in American universities, and now even through that last clip, good old Texas is being involved. That was the University of Texas in Austin. It seems red state, blue state, it doesn't matter. All the students are against the Jewish state. They're siding with the terrorists, and even here in Texas. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily. I'm Brent Nachtigall, the guest host of today's program. I'm filling in for Sam Livingston, who is filling in for Mr. Stephen Flory. So a little bit of respite for Sam. Thanks to him and to Mr. Stephen Flory for allowing me to take the program today. I should say not here in Texas. That's south of us. And I don't think it's happened here in Oklahoma, these protests. But maybe sure enough, it'll happen soon there as well. If you'd like to send some feedback to the show or others, please do send your emails to td@thetrumpet.com, td@thetrumpet.com. I just want to mention, before we get into today's program, where we're going to focus on what's going on the university campuses, not just because of what's happening there, but because of what it means for the United States and for the state of Israel as well. But before I get to that, I want to put a plug for this guest lecture by Dinesh D'Souza. That's taking place here on May 5th at the Armstrong Auditorium at 7:30. He'll be talking about Why Fight for America. That's the title of his lecture that evening, 7:30 p.m. Central Time. I think it's just $15 if you want to come to that here in Armstrong Auditorium, or just $10 if you're anywhere else in the world. And I'm interested to see what he's going to say about what's happening in university campuses all over the United States. I've got a list here. You might be surprised at how many universities in the U.S. are actually protesting. They say they're pro-Palestinian protests. Really, they're pro-Hamas protests. You have pro-Hamas cells being embedded in cities all over the United States, right in the academic centers of each place of these major cities in these major universities. Yale University, Columbia University, Massachusetts University of Technology, even MIT, where Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu attended. University of Minnesota, we'll have a clip from Ilhan Omar, who was there yesterday, later on in today's show. University of California, Berkeley, University of Pittsburgh, University of Rochester in New York, Tufts University, University of Michigan, University of Maryland, University of Southern California, Ohio State University, Emerson College in Massachusetts, Swarthmore College in Pennsylvania, California Polytechnic University, Humboldt, and now Austin as well. We'll see what happens tomorrow. It's only been 6 days since these protests began. Just looking through that clip there, I think it's amazing. They've been talked about as being organic protests, and yet, you know, you see all the tents. One of those clips, I forget where it was, but they're all green. They all look exactly the same. And then there was another place where all the tents look exactly the same. I mean, these are really poor college students. I don't know how they're affording tents, and it looks like somebody else is purchasing them for them, and so they can camp out on these campuses. So in every state, and this is important, in every state of the union, it seems that we're going to have some pockets of anti-American, anti-Israel protests embedded in universities. And what's interesting about this is you could say that this isn't that, you know, isn't that strange for America to have university students come out and protest? Saw it in the 60s and so on, Vietnam. But when has there been a mass protest movement in the United States taken up in support of a terrorist regime which the United States government actually supports? Now, that's the difference this time around. You have the United States government that's actually supporting much of what the protests say. And again, how are they becoming so organized? It's interesting even, I mean, that I just saw in that clip again, the protest in Minnesota, you have them talking about it's not Gaza, it's Gaza. I mean, where are we? They're using the terminology for Gaza that the Arabs do. Apparently, we're in the United States. Honestly, what's going on here in the United States with this movement? Just really virulent, the hatred towards the Jewish state. And the way that it's organized really does remind me of events in the Middle East about a decade ago. And I'm going to talk about that towards the end, and how the Arab Spring was mobilized through small pockets of groups that came together at the behest of the Muslim Brotherhood. And they're mobilized through social media, through Facebook, and it had the backing of the United States government as well. And we're seeing the same thing take place in the United States right now. First of all, I want to just cover a couple of clips. These are from Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who finally came out and spoke about what was going on these college campuses. And it's just interesting. If you look at Prime Minister Netanyahu, you see just, I'm trying to look it through the eyes of one of these protesters. They see everything in him that they hate. He's a Jewish man. He's white. He's polished. All of these things, and he's a benefactor of American power. He even sounds slightly American as well. All these things, these protesters absolutely despise, and yet he speaks the truth. Here we go with clip one from Prime Minister Netanyahu.
What's happening on America's college campuses is horrific. Anti-Semitic mobs have taken over leading universities. They call for the annihilation of Israel. They attack Jewish students. They attack Jewish faculty. This is reminiscent of what happened in German universities in the 1930s. It's unconscionable. It has to be stopped. It has to be condemned, and condemned unequivocally. But that's not what happened. The response of several university presidents was shameful.
So here you've got him weighing in, recollecting what happened in the 1930s in Germany about what's happening in the United States. Back then, you had government-endorsed protests or soon-to-be government-endorsed protests in Germany. I think that's an interesting point, but I do think also that there's more to it than just, you know, this danger of a spread of anti-Semitism inside the United States proper. The United States is not Germany. Israel is an extremely pro-American position, and that's why it's the most bizarre election-winning technique ever to side against the state of Israel, because the majority of voters, even to this day, are pro-Israel. But And nevertheless, it is shameful, the fact that this can go on in the United States and not be put a stop to as yet. Here's clip two.
More has to be done. It has to be done not only because they attack Israel. That's bad enough. Not only because they want to kill Jews wherever they are. That's bad enough. It's also, when you listen to them, it's also because they say not only death to Israel, death to the Jews, but death to America. And this tells us that there's an anti-Semitic surge here that has terrible consequences.
Yeah, so as he says, much bigger than just what's going on in Israel. And Israel is just the embodiment. I mean, we talk about Israel, the state of Israel. It's called a colonialist power, which it isn't really. It's seen as majority white when it's not really. If you go to Israel, I lived there for the past 8 years. You walk down the street and oftentimes you can't tell the difference between a Jewish Israeli and a Palestinian Israeli or an Arab Israeli. Just from the way that they look, you've got all the Jews from that were booted out of Arab countries over the past 100 years that migrated to Israel. So that truth's not true as they would see it. But what's interesting, though, is that what the hatred that these students have for Israel is also the same hatred, the reasons why they hate the United States as well. So if you think this is just an anti-Israel protest, it's not just anti-Israel, it's also protests against America as well, and it'll have terrible consequences for the United States. Clip three now from Netanyahu, the last one.
We see this exponential rise of anti-Semitism throughout America and throughout Western societies as Israel tries to defend itself against genocidal terrorists who hide behind civilians. Yet it is Israel that is falsely accused of genocide, Israel that is falsely accused of starvation and all sundry war crimes. It's all one big libel, but that's not new. We've seen in history that anti-Semitic attacks were always preceded by vilification and slander. Lies that were cast against the Jewish people that are unbelievable, yet people believed them. And what is important now is for all of us who are interested and cherish our values and our civilization, to stand up together and to say enough is enough. We have to stop anti-Semitism, because anti-Semitism is the canary in the coal mine. It always precedes larger conflagrations that engulf the entire world.
Again, he's correct. I mean, his father was a historian. His father was a historian that focused on this period of the Inquisition in the 14th century, I think, in Spain. And what his father taught Netanyahu is that the people in the Inquisition, they came after these Jewish people that had converted to Christianity, and they said their conversions were fake. But even if their conversions for Christianity were real, they still came after them because they were Jews. They were ethnically Jewish people. And so his view of history goes so far back, Prime Minister Netanyahu's does. And he's right. He's right to express alarm and concern when the leading thought centers in the United States are pumping out students who believe lies against the Jewish people. And this is going to continue. I mean, this isn't something that you can tell the truth and go and convince a bunch of these students what they believe. This is what they've been taught for years now. And it's interesting, what's going to come up right now, I think, is that these protests, they cannot die down. They will not die down. I mean, you could say you had, you know, in Austin, there was a protest at Texas University. But then the state troopers came in and said, you know, back, whatever. And they put it down. So that's wonderful. Well, not really. These are thoughts that are embedded into the minds of these people and others in that city and elsewhere. So you might have a strong, you know, strong force of the government, at least the state government, that's trying to put these down. But these are not protests that are going to go away. Why not? Because the United States government that controls everything, the regime that controls everything, that controls the media, they want these protests to continue. They want it. It's interesting. I listened to two radio stations unless my kids wanted some country music sometimes here in the car. The two that I listen to are this one, KPCG on campus as I'm driving around. It's hooked onto this. Or if it's just music playing, I listen to NPR, good old NPR, state-run media. And why do I do that? I do that because I know it's state-run media. I want to hear what they are pushing. What is the latest thing that they are pushing? And when it comes to Israel, it's quite shocking how often Israel is being pumped out. Stories about Israel and stories in particular lately of Rafah. Rafah, Rafah, Rafah. That's all I can hear them saying. Like, go back 2 weeks, or maybe it's a month now, nobody's heard of Rafah. Where is Rafah? Most people probably can't put it onto a map even today. And yet NPR, every single top of the hour, Israel's thinking about engaging or going into Rafah. It's going to be the end of the Palestinian people. If you hear a word over and over and over again that you haven't heard for a while or ever from the regime media, it means something. And so this is what's happening. And I'm going to go through what's happening in Rafah, what will happen in Rafah. It's definitely going to happen. 100% it's going to happen. The United States knows it's going to happen. Hamas knows it's going to happen. Yet they're trying to paint a narrative to get the United States universities riled up, probably delay it a little bit if they can. And so Rafah is important, and it has everything to do with what's going on university campuses right now. I need to talk about it because there's lots of lies that are coming out about this. You need to be aware of these lies, but you also need to be aware that this Rafah engagement that's about to happen is kind of the dog whistle for these people that don't even know about Rafah, and yet it's going to cause them to go crazy. You watch as it happens. This is from the Wall Street Journal yesterday. Israel is moving ahead with plans for a military offensive to take Rafah, the last remaining Hamas stronghold in Gaza, but has responded to U.S. and international pressure by scrapping plans for an all-out assault in favor of a more gradual approach that seeks to limit civilian casualties, according to Egyptian officials and former Israeli officials. So Rafah is this city that's all the way in the south of Gaza. It borders Egypt. You know, this is the border that's been closed for a long, long time. Not just Israel closing borders with Gaza, but Egypt closes borders with Gaza because they don't want all the crazy terrorists, the offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood that's trying to take down the Egyptian government in their country. So they close off their border too. You have what's known as the Philadelphia Corridor, which is this strip between Egypt and Gaza, and Rafah is right next to that. So Rafah is this last stronghold of Hamas terrorists. I think there's three battalions left there. And so if Israel's going to stamp out Hamas, which they will do this, then they're going to have to take Rafah, or at least they'll definitely attempt to do this. Israel has changed. And so what we're seeing now is, as Israel moves forward with its plans to take Rafah, you have several stories coming out in U.S. media that are going to paint it as something that's extremely bad. They've already been doing this, right? They've already been telling college students about Rafah for a while. You even had, well, I'll just keep on reading this for a little bit, so it gives you a little bit of the backstory about what's happening in Rafah. It talks about how that Israel has been with Egypt, having secret meetings over the last couple of days to coordinate with Egypt. That's right. Israel works with Egypt. Israel is allied, actually, in this fight with Egypt. Israel is allied with the Saudis, with the Emiratis, even with the Jordanians, the Egyptians. Nobody likes what's going on. Nobody likes in the region Iran, apart from Iran's proxies. They all want to see Iran squashed, and they all want to see Hamas gone. And yet they can't really say that out loud too much because they've got populations in their countries that are largely Islamist. Not just Islamic, but Islamist. They believe in Muslim rule. They want that. And yet you have these strong leaders, these strong monarchies or a dictator like Abdel Fattah al-Sisi in Egypt that quietly support Israel and can't discuss it too loudly. I mean, just the other day you had Jordanian aircraft taking out Iranian missiles protecting the Jewish state. And so, you know, there is this tacit partnership between Israel and the Gulf states. It's not like Israel is hated everywhere in the Middle East. No, Israel is backed because they're considered the strong horse in the Middle East, especially as Iran, as the United States bails on U.S. allies, the allies of the Gulf states, the former U.S. allies, they come to support Israel. So Israel and Egypt, they're working this out together. continuing in this article, it says, it isn't clear if the shift in Israel's plans for Rafah will address Washington's concerns. Quote, we have not green-lighted a military operation. I want to be very clear on that point, Assistant Secretary of State Near Eastern Affairs Barbara Leaf told reporters on Wednesday. In fact, we've been quite clear publicly and privately that there's no question of a military operation, major or slightly less than major, being undertaken in circumstances in which you have over a million people crowded into a small, very small space in the vicinity of Rafah. And so that's the official government position. Israel, no military operations here, no major military operations. How dare you? And remember, Biden already said he's going to start conditioning U.S. aid, U.S. weapons going to Israel to restock. I mean, Israel is hamstrung. They don't produce the ammunition for the Iron Dome. So what if the United States decides, hey, no more Iron Dome battery missiles for you, to, you know, the ones that are defensive, that take out the offensive weapons of Hezbollah and Hamas? Israel can't defend themselves. And so this is a big deal when the U.S. says we're going to condition aid on a military operation in Rafah. So that's the American position, government. And it's very close to the same position as those protesters inside the universities in the United States. Jacob Nagel, he says he's a former assistant of strategic affairs for the prime minister. He's quoted in this article, says the main reason we didn't enter Rafah was because there was a deal in the air, a hostage deal. Now people understand there's no deal. There's no deal. Why do you think there's no deal between Hamas hostages, or Hamas, sorry, for the hostages that are in Gaza and Israel? There's no deal because they see what's happening in America. Hamas sees what's happening on U.S. campuses, sees what's happening with the U.S. government, says, we don't need a deal right now. The U.S. has got our back. They don't want an operation in Rafah. We don't want an operation in Rafah. We're good. No deal. Deal's off. Of course, though, they're worried because they know Israel, when push comes to shove, they're going to put to side the break with America because they have to, because their survival is at stake. This is existential for them. And they will go into Rafah. So Hamas is worried that Israel's going into Rafah. U.S. is trying to prevent it. So is Qatar, who largely funds Hamas along with Iran. Continuing, Wall Street Journal, Hamas on Wednesday released a video of one of the hostages. You might have seen this on social media. This is U.S.-born Hirsch Goldberg, Poland. So in Israel, you know, before we left in the end of January, my family did everywhere, like on our street and the next street and the next street, there was these big banners talking about free the hostages. And the most prominent one was Hirsch, this American-born Israeli. So he's an American citizen, he's Israeli, and he's been kept in Gaza. He hasn't been released. But just yesterday, you know, right as this incursion's about to start, we have a video that comes surfaces of Hirsch in Gaza as a proof of life video from Hamas. Now, everything that you see in this video, we've just got a short clip for you, just the first 30 seconds. I don't want to show you the whole thing. Some of it's kind of graphic. But everything, you need to know these videos. I mean, they've been put out, Israelis know about this. Everything in this video is something that Hamas wants you to see. It's all for Hamas's benefit, or they don't release the video, right? So we know that. I think we can probably play the video now.
שלום, קוראים לי הירש גולדברג פולין. אני הבן של יונתן ורייצ'ל. נולדתי בשלישי לעשירי שנת 2000 בקליפורניה שבארצות הברית, והיום אני מתגורר עם משפחתי בירושלים. נחטפתי בשביל לאוקטובר במסיבה בחניון רעים.
So just a short clip, so you see it there. A couple of points to add from this video. See how he definitely says he's born in California. So he's, you know, he's American, right? He's American. He's a hostage that's still in Gaza. So this is not just for an Israeli audience. This is for an American audience as well. He's an American citizen. You see there that last clip, I was arrested on 7th of October at the Nova concert in Raim. So if you had a doubt that this is Hamas propaganda, the use of the word arrested there should kind of give it away that this is Hamas propaganda. They weren't arrested. They were kidnapped, if you want, mowed down, raped, tortured, then taken. And you can see he's missing a hand there, blown off by a grenade. This guy wasn't arrested by Hamas. But what's interesting, again, I'm not, obviously he's there, I'm not trying to belittle the suffering that he's going through as well, but he's being used. He's being used as a pawn by Hamas. But notice how all this comes back to the United States and what the United States is doing. This is from Axios. It says here that, from Axios, it's Qatar passed U.S. proof of life of Israeli-American hostage on Monday. Hamas released a video of an Israeli-American hostage as a gesture to the Qatari government. Well, thank you very much, Hamas, to the Qatari government. When you see a Qatari government, it's the same as Hamas. It's the same. I mean, the three guys that rule Hamas, they're each got, I think, $2 billion to their name, $3 billion to their name, $4 billion to their name. They live in Qatar. So that's where they are. So when it says a gesture to the Qatari government wanted this. So did the United States, which had pressured the military group to provide proof of life in recent weeks, according to two sources with knowledge of the issue. The undated video of Hirsch Goldberg Polin, a 23-year-old dual citizen who is among the most well-known of the hostages abducted on October 7th, was delivered by Hamas to Qatar, the sources said. Then it goes on and says, the Goldberg Polin mother, Rachel, you might have seen her. Rachel has become a prominent leader in the United States to push free the hostages and was featured last week in Times Magazine's list of the most 100 influential people of 2024. So you have U.S. media, they're obviously, you know, putting forward this mother of Hirsch. Again, he's the U.S. citizen. He wasn't released earlier with the previous batches of Israelis. He's not a fighter. He's U.S. citizen, and yet he's the man that's released right now, American born. The Qataris wanted it out, and President Biden wants to know about it, and President Biden's talking about this already. Zoom in. It says this: a source with direct knowledge of the matter said the Biden administration has asked Qatari government several times for assistance in getting the proof of life for Goldberg Polin and another American citizens hostages. Now, what's interesting in this video is if you watch the rest of it, it's basically against Prime Minister Netanyahu. It's Prime Minister Netanyahu. It's your fault. You need to come get us. You need to leave office. I mean, this is all. It's all a hit job against Prime Minister Netanyahu. So, again, if you've got American protesters at American universities and the biggest state sponsor for American universities outstripping the nearest by double is Qatar. Qatar spent over $3.5 billion over the last couple of years in different American universities. The UK, I think, is about half that, and then the rest are far less than that. So you've got Qatari government funding US universities where the protests are happening. You've got the Qatari government funding Hamas, who releases this video of Goldberg, of Hirsch, and everyone wants to get rid of Netanyahu. You tell me these aren't connected. Obviously, they're connected. There's a political aim. And it comes down to, again, this operation that is about to take place to totally destroy Hamas. If that's possible, that's what the United States government is going to go. Axios finally says this at the bottom of their article. It says, what to watch? Israel's war cabinet is expected to meet Thursday to discuss a new initiative to advance the hostage negotiations. A senior Israeli told Axios, preliminary discussions began in war cabinet meeting on Sunday about new ideas for breaking the impasse, and so on and so forth. And so we'll see, you know, whether that goes forward. But it may go forward. There may be a hostage deal. Why? Why is it going to be a hostage deal? Because Israel is going to invade Rafah. Because Israel is going to try and stamp out Hamas, because they have to and they know that. So please understand how this is happening and how it's all connected with the United States government being involved here. You even had a member of the U.S. Congress. I know she's pretty fringe. Nevertheless, voted in U.S. Congress, Minnesota, University of Minnesota yesterday, Ilhan Omar, her daughter's arrested at some of these protests, and now she's speaking to them. Here is your United States representative and what she cares about most. Here's clip 8.
I have the proud honor of representing this incredible university in Congress. And I have to tell you, I am incredibly moved by your courage and bravery as a student body in putting your bodies on the line to stand in solidarity to end the genocide that is taking place in Gaza at this moment.
Yeah, just listening to that as an American would just be so shocking, I think, to most. And most would disown her. I understand that. And yet, you know, here she is, given a platform, allowed to speak, talking about the genocide of Israel, of the greatest ally of the United States in the state of Israel. And she's applauded. She's applauded by the minions, the know-nothing minions that are right there before her. And she's moved by it. She's encouraged by what's happening on U.S. campuses. Clip 9 now.
I have to tell you, it's been incredibly painful for the last 5 days to see the discovery, while there is a discovery, of a mass grave of more than 200 Palestinians in Khan Yunis, that our media, our elected politicians, our president, every single leader is spending their time and energy in talking about the protests as if you all are not here to give voice to the genocide that is taking place in Gaza.
So again, that's just all lies. I mean, what she's talking about in Khan Yunus, and we'll go through this, Khan Yunus, as she says, I mean, where are you? You're in the United States. She doesn't have to say that. She's like Khan Yunus like the rest of us. But she doesn't. And she is saying that over the past few days, it's this story that's emerged, deliberately timed also with the protest movement. And the elected officials of the U.S. government, they're worried, not worried about the genocide in Israel, just as a mass grave is discovered that Israeli soldiers have been digging mass graves and funneling Palestinian or Arab kids, Arab people, into these graves. So that's what she comes out. She's talking about this yesterday. This has been debunked. It's a lie. Israel didn't do it. But who promulgated this story? Have a guess. Have a guess. Who was the first one that created this narrative, this story over the past few days? Of course, it's Al Jazeera, right? Al Jazeera reporter in Gaza. And so we've got the BBC in the UK, right? And you have NPR and others here. And what do you have in Qatar? Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera is the mouthpiece for the Qatari government, who is paying for Hamas, who loves Hamas. So Qatar, remember, they are putting out this story that Israel has engaged in slaughter of civilians, burying them in mass graves so nobody knows what's happened. And then you have a U.S. government official taking the Qatari government talking point, the Hamas talking point, trumpeting it to the protesters and the know-nothing protesters as they're like, well, that's horrible. Israel is a genocidal regime. It needs to be wiped off the map because they're wiping off the Palestinians from the map. And it's all a lie. It's all fabricated. This is a story from the Jerusalem Post. Is this the story I want? No, here it is. Next story. I have the Qatari story here. Nearly 200 bodies found in mass graves at the hospital in Gaza's Khan Yunus. And I'll just actually should quote that. It says here, quote, this is Al Jazeera's Hani Mahmoud reporting from Khan Yunus on Sunday, says, in the hospital courtyard, civil defense members and paramedics have retrieved 180 bodies buried in this mass grave by the Israeli military. So again, why do we even? It's extremely frustrating because you have others that are going to pick up this U.S. Well, they're all in it together, right? Many U.S. stories have been picked up. Israel's committing war crimes, mass graves, but it's not true. Jerusalem Post article now: analysts debunk Hamas's claims that Israel dug mass graves at Nasser Hospital. It doesn't matter. This already came out. It's already been debunked before Ilhan Omar gave that speech. She doesn't care. It's a lie that works, and so she'll use it. Analyses by Sky News and independent analysts of satellite imagery and footage published online found that claims spread by Hamas and Arabic media that the IDF had dug mass graves at the Nasser Hospital in Gaza were false, as the graves were made before the IDF entered the complex. Maybe you can play that, put that screenshot up. I'm not used to yelling like this, so my voice is kind of going. But you can see the date there. And this is a picture of Arabs digging the mass grave before the time that Israelis went into this hospital. And there's three videos of Arabs digging graves and burying people before the Israelis even went there. I'm not going to show you those videos. But this is thoroughly debunked. Israelis didn't do it. No, this was Qatari propaganda that comes from Hamas agent. Remember, we talked about this already on the program, how Al Jazeera were there. Al Jazeera was in Israel from Gaza on October 7th reporting on what happened in real time, and then they were a party to it. They were actually taking Israelis back to Gaza as well. And here you have, again, this lie propagated by Ilhan Omar and other in the U.S. press lying about Israel. But, you know, the news cycle, it goes through. Who's reading this article from the Jerusalem Post? Probably not too many. What is going on? What is going on with reporting from Israel or Al Jazeera, taken at face value, trumpeted to U.S. campuses, and then the useful idiots are out there protesting against genocidal Israel, and it's all lies. It's all lies. Let's just go finally now to clip 10 from Ilhan Omar.
What started out 5 days ago with only 70 students organizing themselves at Columbia University has now led to a nationwide university movement.
Right. Organized by themselves. I don't know what some of these university students could organize, but in 5 days to start it up, timed exactly with the Rafah operation, timed with the release of the video of this hostage, American-born hostage, timed with Qatari government's propaganda outlet going to work. These are not grassroots protests. Are you kidding me? Nobody believes that in the United States. These are government-backed United States protests and U.S. campuses, all for the sake of mobilizing, you know, these cells. I'm going to call them cells. These are cells, terrorist-loving cells, embedded in your cities, your state's capital, across the United States. This is something that's dangerous. Again, it's not going away. These people have been indoctrinated. It is not going away. If they are anti-Israel, fundamentally, the reasons they hate Israel are the same reasons they hate the United States. Israel goes away, these people are still going to protest. They'll find a cause, or the regime media will put one out. Again, this is for, it's not something that is benefiting the United States in any way. This is not a popular protest that is going to arouse great change in the United States or for a good movement at all. This is arranged by Hamas, Iran, and sadly the Biden administration as well. They are not organizing themselves. They are being organized. All these things are connected. What's going on in the Middle East with these protests in the United States. And it does spell a danger. These are not going away. Again, these protests, these are indoctrinated people. Now, what I want to do is I'm going to show you how a little bit further how what's going on in the U.S. campus is connected to what's going on in Israel and also biblical prophecy when we come back, particularly noting not Hirsch, but the life of another hostage that was released from Gaza. We'll take a quick break.
the developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does He allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
Welcome back. I've got about 15 minutes left, and I want to show you a couple of these videos. You've probably covered this. You've probably followed this a little bit. This was a hostage that was taken on October 7th. Her name was Emily Hand. Her father has a British accent. I believe British accent. He might be Irish. I'm not sure. So forgive me if that was wrong. What happened with this is pretty stunning, because it shows you the Israeli resolve. And this is why it's important when you watch these videos. We've got the first one, which will take you back to the time that it happened shortly thereafter when he thought his daughter was dead. And why I want to show you this is because it's showing you the change that has happened in Israel, that is telling you that Israel offensive against Iran or Hamas is not going to stop, is not going to end. And this is important for the United States, because if the United States government, the regime media, Qatar and Ilhan Omar and all these people are trumpeting that Israel is the aggressor in this war and they are protesting the aggression of Israel, Israel is not going to stop the aggression because they cannot. And so these protests that have started in the United States against this, they're going to continue just as surely as the fight that Israel has. And so if we can play clip four, I guess.
Now a month on since the Hamas gunmen executed more than 1,400 Israeli men, women and children, and kidnapped hundreds more. Now an Irish-born father and Hamas attack survivor is coming to terms with the unexpected news that his daughter, Emily, who he thought was dead, may still be alive.
The anguish Thomas Hand is about to describe has left him trembling for weeks. It's a journey of death and a hope of resurrection, he says, is impossible to imagine.
On the day it was Russian roulette, whether you made it or not.
On October 7th, Hamas fighters stormed the kibbutz Be'eri, killing roughly 130 people and ravaging the community of 1,100 residents. That morning, Thomas's 8-year-old daughter, Emily, was sleeping at a friend's house. Thomas could not reach her as Hamas fighters took over the kibbutz. Days after the attack, the Irish-born father spoke with CNN's Clarissa Ward about the moment he was told his daughter had been killed.
Thomas waited 2 agonizing days before getting the news.
They just said, "We found Emily. She's dead." And I went, "Yes." I went, "Yes," and smiled, because that is the best news of the possibilities that I knew.
Thomas says leaders of the Be'eri kibbutz community told him Emily's body was seen in the aftermath. But almost a month after the massacre, Thomas was given news that almost made him collapse. He says the Israeli army told him it's highly probable Emily is alive and a Hamas hostage.
So you might remember this man talking about this. It's something that was widely shared on social media. Be'eri is just one of these close communities to the Gaza border, one of the most devastated places by October 7th. And most of the people that live here in this enclave that are around Gaza, they aren't your right-wing settlers, if you can call them that. They're not that way at all. A lot of them actually had Palestinians from Gaza getting work permits, coming in, working on their properties, working in Be'eri and elsewhere. They wanted to work together. These people wanted peace. And yet all the while, those Palestinians are taking reconnaissance for Hamas. And, you know, on the way back, he believes that his daughter was killed. He's thankful for that because she wouldn't be in terrorist hands. But then that changed. Here's a next clip, clip 5.
This is the moment that Emily Hand, you can see her right there, was reunited with her father, Thomas Hand. That was just moments ago, another family right there reuniting as well. Emily is 9 years old. She turned 9 while in captivity, released today after 50 days held by Hamas.
So she was actually released after 50 days with a massive swap of convicted prisoners from Israeli jails for innocent people just like this. But what effect has this had on him? What effect has October 7th had on Israelis? Because U.S. media wants to paint what's going on in Israel right now is one of the same old things that's always happens between Hamas and Israel. They're both equally bad, right? Or perhaps Israel's slightly better, but they'll go for a tit-for-tat exchange. And as long as we get the hostages back, right? This is about the hostages. Then Israel can just stop what they're doing. But it's not about the hostages. And I want to show you this now. This very same man that, again, is not, you know, pro, you know, right wing Israeli. But how has the Israeli mindset changed? And why does it mean that what's going on now in the Middle East will be perpetuated? Here is the next clip.
Some say that the price that Israel needs to pay for releasing the hostages has a high cost.
Yeah, the Hamas are going to want as much as they can for every single hostage that they've got. We'll give them prisoners back. And a lot of times in the papers it says, a hostage deal. It's not a hostage deal, it's a swap of hostages for convicted prisoners.
Murderers.
Yeah, some cases, yeah.
Some of them very cruel.
Very cruel, and like we already let one very important guy go, and he's now the leader of them.
Yeah.
So that's a very, very big risk. But that's why we have to completely destroy Hamas from the top.
Some say
to the bottom.
We can't really do that.
Yeah. We can make it extremely weak and simply not allow them back into Gaza ever.
But I'm just trying to understand. So what you're saying is that Israel should release, no matter what's the amount of the prisoners, murderers that she has, in order
reason,
to get everyone back.
Within reason, of course, yeah.
What is within reason?
Well, they couldn't turn around and say we want every single Palestinian prisoner in jail.
Well, they can.
They can say it, but they're not going to get it. Talk reasonable numbers.
So how comfortable do you feel talking to me about, you know, the numbers and about what Israel should do when your daughter, who was in captivity for so long, is sitting next to you and she's fine and she's healthy and she's okay?
Believe it or not, in my head, at the time when she was captive, I knew that the IDF had to do everything in its powers to destroy Hamas primarily and to do whatever they could to find and retrieve the hostages, and within that thought process I realized that she could be bombed, could be shot by friendly fire. That was a price that in my head I could say, yeah, okay, so long as we destroy Hamas, so long as the government and the military finish the job they've started out to do. If not, everyone who's died, hostages, all the massacres, all the terrible things that happen is pointless. Pointless. A waste of time, effort and lives. We have to finish the job completely. And I really don't care what the world says. I really don't care. Doesn't matter what I say, they'll think whatever they want. But now, we have to finish it. They started it, and we will finish it.
So this is a huge shift that's changed in Israeli thinking because of what's happened on October 7th. You know, before this time, you had most or many Israelis that believed that it might be possible to live side by side with the Palestinians because, you know, they hadn't gone to these very extreme lengths. I mean, October 7th, Israel's 9/11, but worse, far worse than America's 9/11. This is somebody that borders you, that declares the next day that they have had the, if they had the power, they would do it again. Just by the numbers, it was a huge difference. And it's changed people like that man from realizing that land for peace does not work. Giving the Palestinians land so that they can create this terrorist network to then, if they can, have the power to come and attack us, they will. That does not work. It does not work anymore. This is really interesting because it shows you where what's happening right now in Rafah, what's about to happen in Rafah, and the spill-on effect in the United States, right? Blaming the state of Israel for everything, perhaps leading to an even bigger break between the United States and Israel. It shows you where that's leading. Just one verse I want to show you, one prophecy that speaks to the change that's happening right now in the minds of Israelis. This is a scripture that's found in Hosea 5, verse 13. It says, "When Ephraim saw his sickness, and Judah," that's the state of Israel, "Judah saw his wound." And Mr. Flurry has written at length in The Eternal Is Chosen Jerusalem and Jerusalem in Prophecy. These are books that are available to you wherever you are in the world for free. You can go to thetrumpet.com to order those. He has spoken at length that the peace process is this wound. At some point, Israel is going to see that land for peace does not work. They see that. This has happened. We live now in this prophecy in Hosea 5 verse 13. "When Ephraim saw his sickness and Judah saw his wound, then he went to the Assyrian, to King Jarib, yet he could not heal you of your wound." Now, if you read the literature and The Eternal Is Chosen Jerusalem, it talks about how this Assyrian, they're going to eventually go for Germany, their former archenemy, for help at dealing with this problem, the land that they've given to the Palestinian problem. But they're trying to do it themselves right now. Israel is trying to act. They see the wound and they're like, "We've got to eradicate this wound. No more terrorists, no more land governed by Palestinians. That's not the way to peace. It's the way to war. It's a sickness." And they're going to try and cure it themselves. And then when that doesn't work, prophecy says that they're going to go to Germany. But what's interesting about this, as it shows you that we're living in this prophecy, there's a big change that's happened in Israel. Just one quote from Mark Dubowitz. He visited Israel in November. And he said this: "Some observations from 24 hours from the ground in Israel." He's a Middle East commentator for decades, well trusted in that way. "I hadn't fully understood how much the country had profoundly changed. The horrors of October 7th were worse than I had imagined and been reported. The resolve of the Israeli people and willingness to do what is necessary to defeat this unimaginable evil is much greater than I expected. They are deeply appreciative of American support, but committed to what they have to do regardless of that support. They are prepared to pay a much higher price than ever before. Nothing will ever be the same. You cannot appreciate any of this until you look into their eyes. It's like nothing I've ever seen. Khamenei, Hamas, and Hezbollah have awakened something that they will live to regret. And many of these monsters won't live to even experience that regret." So something has changed in Israel. Israel is going on the offensive, and they will. Sadly, they're not going to recognize, they should recognize, that they can't cure this by themselves. Instead of going to these other nations, they should go to God for help, as they have done in their own history. But what I want you to see is how it connects to what's going on in the United States. If the United States and the protests and the media are going to be stuck on trying to stop Israel from waging this war, The protests are not going to end. The protests will grow. They'll grow because Israel has seen their wound in many ways, and they are moving this forward. So definitely, as you watch these protests take off in the United States, recognize that though it might be against Israel right now, and though they're going to be pushed, this is showing you that these institutions are fundamentally against United States interests, and really, they're against the foundation of the United States as well, which is so similar to the biblical foundations for the nation of Judah. Please go ahead and request this booklet. It's the Eternal Has Chosen Jerusalem. Our operators are ready for you. The number is 1-866-930-3024, or you can go to td@thetrumpet.com to request it there, or put your own feedback in on today's show. Thanks very much for listening.